invite you into this conversation to have big ears, ready and willing to hear and apply everything that's possible to apply from the first century Aramaic teachings of this man, Yeshua. Everything we're doing has been decoded from his work. If you think, and I've had several pieces, Michael, what a genius piece of work you've done to put that together. It's like, no, it's not a reflection of my genius. I put it together, but I am not the one who came to the point of understanding and the how to use the direct use of the tools. So all of the honor and thanks for that goes to man Yeshua. The brilliance of this physicist, this physiologist, this geneticist, this psychologist is absolutely astounding when you meet him in his native Aramaic language. Now, if you haven't met the Creator yet, meet him. Choose to meet him through Yeshua. You'll notice that he calls the Creator our Father, not his Father, our Father. And he gives us the attributes of the Creator. Love, period. Someone whose good pleasure it is to take us into, the Greeks translated as the kingdom, but actually in Aramaic, those words that have been translated as the kingdom of God actually translate to community of love. Good pleasure to give it to us. And it's been given to us from minute one. One of the things that, and recognize that our essence is the same, and that we live in a culture that has become masterful. The most cherishing, so-called loving parents are masters at ripping the child out of the experience of themselves as love. They're driving them deeply into insecurity, self-loathing, rage and fear. And the return to the truth of who we are means that we need to face those moments. And most everyone, when they get down to the brass tacks of it, go back to the most deeply painful moments, and there you find, right there with them, a parent who is not able to function as love themselves. And there's where the offense begins. They talk about you've done something to offend God. God has never been offended. That's just silliness. Love could not be offended. But can we engage in an energy that's other than love and lose our connection to love, break our connection to love? Yeah, we've all done it. And we do that by engaging in energetic patterns that never belonged within us. Those energetic patterns in Aramaic were called sin. Sin, an archery term in Aramaic that simply means off the mark. When you were on the archery range and fired the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled, "Sin, you're off the mark." How do we find ourselves in hell? We find ourselves in hell by forgetting who we are, by buying into sadness and rage and fear and guilt and pain and drama and trauma. And those energetic patterns are stored right there in our physiology, and our physiology becomes hell. So if you want to get out of hell, we recently on the show, I guess a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the film Gandhi. So we went out and pulled the movie out and watched it. And there's a particularly powerful scene. Gandhi, he's sworn to fast to death if he has to stop the violence that he's become a part of by working to rid the India of the British Empire. And there's conflict between the Muslims and the Hindus. And he's laying on his deathbed. He's laying, he can just breathe. He's on his way out. And this wild-eyed Hindu man comes up to the room where he is, and he's got a piece of bread, and he throws it at Gandhi. He says, "Here, eat, eat. I don't want your death on my conscience." Gandhi looks at him like, well, what's going on with you, bud? He said, I'm going to go to hell. And Gandhi says, why? Why do you believe that? He said, today I killed a child. I picked a child up and I smashed its head against a wall and I killed him. Why would you do such a thing? Because they killed my son. And Gandhi looks at him, and Gandhi can hardly speak at this point. And the actor that plays Gandhi in that film is so powerfully amazing in it. And Gandhi says, I know a way out of hell. The man looks at him, and he's like, I mean, he's just wild-eyed, crazy-looking. He says, I know a way out of hell. And he raises his hand up, and when the man told him he killed a child, he showed him how tall his son was. He said, they killed my son. And Gandhi raises his hand to that lovely, he says, go and find a Muslim boy about this tall and raise him in love, but raise him as a Muslim. So he's talking to a Hindu man. And there's this hate between the Hindus and the Muslim at that stage. He says, raise him as a Muslim, and you'll find your way out of hell. What does one have to do to find their way out of hell? And your hell might be the person next door, or the government, or your spouse, or your child, or your parent, or the guy down the way, whatever it is. There's a way out. And the way out is to raise yourself as a human being, to choose to function as you were designed to function, as conscious, active, present love, which means that you're going to have to face everything in you that's unlike that. Everything has been born and bred in you through the generations. Everything based in hostility or fear. Everything that could possibly take you out of the truth about you as love. It's going to surface in you. It's going to be seen. It's going to be felt. It's going to have to be dealt with. It's not Dr. Feelgood. It's not easy.
Oh, cool. Area code 484. You're on the air. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I'm calling because I feel like I know I'm in the middle of a great healing opportunity. I've been going through a lot the last month, and it relates to having one of my cats disappear.
Ouch.
And so it's like there's a what I've been really struggling with is, and I have already gained so much insight through through this whole process and seeing all these parallels between things in the past and what's going on now, and finding the thoughts that I really need to let go of, and I'm still like, every time I think okay, I start feeling better, and then it's like I just don't seem to be able to let go of this cat, and the thought that he might need me, and that if I something in me is telling me you just need to let him go, and then there's another part of me that says, yeah, but and I know it's because I was in this position as a child. What if he needs help and I just stop even looking for him?
Well, here would be my offering, Ellen, and that is, are you in your highest intuitive, healing, capable self when you're in some form of hostility or fear or degraded energy, or when you are totally connected to love and being? Which state would you call your highest?
Oh, obviously when I'm connected to love.
If your cat needs support and therefore needs your intuition to tap into where he is, what's going on with him, how you can support him, perhaps in mind only, or perhaps actually show up in his physical presence. Which state would you have the highest guidance to be able to get that together and offer that support?
Yeah, I obviously in my that love state, and this is what has been going on with me. I get myself there, and I'm always, you know, because I have his flyers that I put up, you know, I have some in my house, and so I see his picture all the time, and I'm always just
right.
affirming how much I love him, sending him my love, picturing him being well, and just, you know, trying to connect with him,
right.
and I can get myself in a really good face with it and really trust that he's exactly where he's supposed to be right now, and that everything is going to work out just perfectly, even though I have no idea, you know, what that looks like, but just trust that, and I'll be okay for, like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days, and then I get a message from someone, because of course I posted him on all the social media as missing. I'll get a message, oh, I saw your cat today, you know, and then I go into this process of getting my hopes up, and then, you know, nothing comes of it, and feeling, you know, I just keep crashing, and then I have to work my way back up into that good place, and then
I hear you.
It's been really
powerful.
So
when I listen to what you've shared with us so far, here's my input. Here's what I hear. I hear that you cherish this animal. And when you get into a really connected space, you're there, you can hold that space. But it brings you to a thought disorder you learned at a time when you needed help and somebody wasn't there for you.
Exactly.
And your healing crisis looks like you working through the thought disorders you learned. I don't know what age you were when that event happened. You might have been 2 or 4 or 10, I don't know. But you took on thought disorders, and they keep dragging you back into the pit.
Yes.
So what's actually, the thought?
There's actually two. One is from when I was a child, and I was in a position where I needed help and wasn't getting
right.
it. And then the other is actually kind of almost on the other side of that, where I do feel like if I give up on him, like I'm abandoning him. And so the other side of it is that, because I know, obviously, I didn't abandon this animal. He just disappeared, right? But
right.
I was shown a past life experience in a couple of years ago in which I abandoned my baby. And I was realizing yesterday that the thoughts I'm having about him now, like, where is he? How is he? Like, these are the things that I feel like so much desperation around, that I must have been having those same exact feelings back in that lifetime about my baby that I abandoned.
Right.
So I see two different real opportunities for me in this for that needs
powerful
healing. Yes.
Yeah. Nice work being able to be conscious of that. So then what forgiveness looks like, let's take the context of the early childhood experience where you needed help and there was nobody there for you. And remembering that the forgiveness process looks like when I have a construct in my mind, perceptual construct, it's based in some form of thought disorder, some form of hostility or fear. The thing that activates that is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a powerful line in the Course in Miracles that says, perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So the Creator gave us a life and an experience, and we made up perception. We made up these constructs based in thought disorders. These constructs are reflections of thought disorders. So mm-hmm. the thought disorder that you took on, my offering, what I hear, the closest I hear it in that early childhood experience is that nobody's there for me.
Yep.
Or, and there may be several variations on the theme, I need help yes. and there's no help.
Yes.
So what forgiveness would...
I'm helpless.
Right.
No one, you know, is there to help me. Yeah, all
hopeless.
Those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have several worksheets to do around that. So I'd mm-hmm. start looking at, seeing as how that's what's coming up in this situation, you go back and you start looking at, so my first worksheet would be, I'd really like somebody to just be there for me. And maybe there's a lot of, and with the animal missing, very likely there's grief. And the grief would be a reflection of the energy taken on in that early childhood experience where I just wanted somebody to be there for me and there wasn't anybody. And the grief and the loss.
Exactly.
And the, you know, perhaps self-deprecation would be what you'd need to process through. So let's cancel the goal. How about, you know, I cancel the goal and think of yourself in that situation as a child. I cancel the goal to have somebody be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going ahead and doing that.
Yeah, well, what comes up is that I can't do it on my own.
Yeah, okay. So then the next step, and this would be, you know, when they said to Yeshua, how many darn worksheets do we have to do? Is seven enough? In Aramaic, he said, no, 77 times 70. So there might be several. So that would be the first, and I'd sit down. This sounds like it's really core stuff and important enough mm-hmm. to sit down and do each of these worksheets in writing. So the first mm-hmm. one would be the need, the desire for someone to be there for me. And then what's my next worksheet? Oh, well, surfaced as you canceled that goal is the thought disorder, I can't do it on my own. So what would the goal be there? The goal would be to be able to do this, whatever the situation was, to be able to handle it.
Very big, because I started having all these issues with my hands. And when I really cued in on it, what came to me are these two phrases. The one was, I can't handle it. And the other one, I forget what the other one was right now, but I say that to myself like a lot, and so I catch myself now every time that thought starts coming in, and I say I can handle it. Yeah. I can.
But you see, when I try to kid myself, when I try mm-hmm. to be in what I call, it's called a disorder or at least a disease that I call premature positive thinking. I can, mm-hmm. I can't. But if I'm trying to plaster over a thought disorder that says I can't, then I'm trying to mm-hmm. cover the pit that I need to clean out with a positive thought that isn't true at this moment.
It may
actually be true. Gee, here I am. It's now 30 years later. I can do it. But if I still plaster over the thought disorder that I can't, then that thought disorder is like an infection that's going to fester and impact. Did I hear you say you're having trouble with your hands?
Yes. They,
what's happening?
It's like the circulation. Well, when I go to sleep at night, and this has been going on for years, when I go to sleep at night, they totally fall asleep. It's like I lose all circulation. And I have trouble like trying to put them in position. You know, I'm always constantly changing the, you know, waking up because they've fallen asleep and trying to move them into position where they wake up again. And then.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then the next worksheet would look like, I cancel my need to be able to handle this. I cancel my need to have the skills. Or it might be I don't have the knowledge, or maybe I'm not smart enough, or I'm not capable, whatever. Ferret out and look for exactly what the goal is in that situation that, you know, in the essence of it at this point would be, I need to be able to handle this. So I cancel my need to be able to handle this. And what happens, remember, when you cancel a goal, let's go back again to that thought from the course. Perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So the Creator gave you full power. But if I buy a thought disorder that says, I can't handle this, then with that thought disorder, I shut down, through my own beliefs, that part of my power. It's there. I just lock it away from myself. I put it away in a drawer, and I dissociate from it, so it's no longer mine. Right. The way I open that up again is to cancel the need. It seems backward, but by canceling the need, what happens is that perceptual construct that's coming from some deep unconscious place in my tissue structure, in this case, literally, physiologically, your hands, that's the part of your mind, this thought disorder stored in, you're noticing. When mm-hmm. I cancel my need to handle it, that perceptual construct and all the pain that it holds collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, I can now literally capture the neuropeptides out of the tissue, pull them out of the tissue, decode them. Oh, maybe when I cancel the need to be able to handle this, I'm going to come to awareness that, well, if I don't handle this, I'm going to die.
Well, that's how I felt.
Or I'm going to be, okay, so that would be the next thought disorder. So now what's the goal when that comes? Say again?
I was going to say, in fact, I mean, I think it was like, I don't know, something in me finally like made the decision that I must find a way to stop feeling these feelings that I can't handle, or else I'm going to be a mental institution and locked away and maybe lobotomized, or I was just terrified that if I didn't find a way to handle this, that something really bad, like I may not survive. So somehow a part of me shut down my whole thing.
So we want to open that back up again. You're not going to find any happy stuff in there, probably. This is not going to be a Dr. Feelgood process, as we're talking about. The healing crisis isn't going to be fun. But if you cancel your goal, literally, in this case, I cancel my need to survive in this situation, that's when the perception based on the thought disorder of I'm not going to survive this collapses in on itself. Now I can take the death thought. I can allow the death thought that's in my unconscious, stored literally in my hands, to open, breathe in the presence of it, expose it to love, and dissolve it. Not have to carry that around in my tissue structure any longer.
Oh, something else just popped in. I was also shown last summer, taken my own life, and the way that I had done it was literally... It was, well, I took my life, you know, it was at my own hand, and I saw myself with the gun in my, and see, this is mainly in my right hand. I get a little bit in my left hand, but in my right hand, I held the gun to my temple, and I pulled the trigger. And so now seeing that connection, because I kind of suspect that the life that I've been in my baby was the same life that I committed suicide, because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle the guilt of the abandoning, and then I couldn't handle the not knowing of what had happened to the baby, you know, like all this stuff I'm going through right now. So like right now is my opportunity to heal all this stuff that I wasn't able to.
Who'd have thunk that a cat disappearing could possibly bring someone as enlightened as you are into this level of healing?
I know, he's my angel. Yesterday I was like, wow. I saw how I was his angel, because he was starving when I took him in. I mean, and he was still a kitten, and I brought him back to life. And it was like, I'm like, is it a coincidence that once I got him to the point where, I mean, this cat was ravenous. And after about, you know, a year of being with me, he was perfectly healthy, had grown into an adult, and actually got to the point of being the pickiest eater of all my cats. And I was having trouble feeding him because he was turning his nose up at everything. And then that's when he disappears. And I was like, wow, maybe I was just an angel, and he needed. at that point in time to food, to survive.
Complete,
now I completed my service with him, and he is gone. And then I saw that, wow, he's really my angel, too, because his disappearance is bringing up all this stuff that I need to look at.
Powerful. And if you think back to that memory of abandoning your child, was there any kind of incarceration or being put into an institution or anything that happened? Are you aware of any of that?
I was not. It was very bizarre the way this particular experience was shown to me, and all I was given was that I left a baby at the curb. That's all I know.
Well, just listening to your language somewhere, and I wonder if there's something genetically, is there anyone in your family's history that you know of that's been put into a mental institution, and or was the result of abandoning that child where you went crazy and maybe ended up in that institution? Just hearing the language that goes around it, our speech is part of the healing process, and we'll touch into speech patterns oftentimes in doing the worksheet process that reflect experiences, events, sometimes genetic memories that need to be cleaned out.
Well, there's the only thing that pops into my mind is that there is a history, because it happened with myself and it happened with my father's sister, of there being no bond ever forming between the mother and the daughter, and there being this huge gulf that never got resolved. Like in the case of my aunt, who I never met, because she left as soon as she was able to leave the house at the age of 18, she moved across the country, and she never for the remainder of her mother's life or my father's life ever contacted her again. And it's just like this huge rift. And I found out that what caused the rift between my mother and myself was exactly the same as what caused the rift between her and her mother, which was the father's insistence that the mother not hold or tend to the baby.
Yeah, that was a very common thing back then.
Yeah.
So notice what all you're processing at this point. That's huge stuff. And it sounds like perhaps that's some of the energy that is also being cleaned up in this forgiveness work that you need to do between you and your mom. And who knows what kind of results cleaning that up will bring in your world.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that forgiveness is kind of complete as far as between my mother and myself. I mean, I really saw how all of the things that happened there were actually for my benefit, because I came in with such a need for codependency, and she pretty much didn't allow that to even be a possibility with her. And it really pushed me to self-reliance. I mean, everyone in the family, because there was no one to rely on, so it was pretty much forcing me into a place I needed to go in life.
So my offering is the antidote to codependence is not independence. The answer to codependence is interdependence, where we can be there for each other, but not out of compulsive, pained states, but rather intertwining our lives with others in the presence of love, bringing forward the active presence of love. Not, I learned I have to go off and do this on my own. That's more of the nobody's there for me. That's more of that early childhood event that needs to be healed so that you can move into interdependent relationship where there is total connectedness, communication, and reliance on support with and for and from another human being, but where there is no hostility or fear involved, so that we get to truly live interdependent lives as we are designed to do. You know, we've all heard the saying, no man is an island. No person could possibly. I mean, if I had to do it all on my own, I'd have to know how to make shoes. I'd have to know how to make refrigerators and stoves and cars and how to build. I'd have to know. I can't do all of that. I have to be interdependent. But if I have hostility or fear in my interdependence, that's when I move into codependence. And so the antidote for codependence is really, truly arriving at a space where love is present and there's interdependence in my life with anyone and everyone that I connect with.
Yeah, I think I moved from one full codependent to total independence, and neither of them, you know, because then I find that, you know, yeah, I'm trying to do everything myself. I'm not, you know, I don't have any, you know, I'm just alone. So
yeah, neither of them is healthy.
No.
Yeah.
And so it's that interdependence. So, okay. So I have...
Good breath. There. Did you catch that breath that just moved in you spontaneously?
Yeah.
Hey, when you go back and listen to this particular moment and just catch the breath that moved. That's the breath. That's the still point breath. That's where the breath moves, and that's where the healing is. That's where that veil of the unconscious is opened, and that unconscious content now is being released. That's exactly where it happens. That's the energy of it. And it just comes spontaneously. It's not something you can say, well, I'm going to breathe and that'll do it. It's where I'm energetically prepared to let that veil open in me, that barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious open. Forgiveness does that. The breath does that. And that breath that just moved is what moves the energy.
Yeah, so what I'm seeing now is that the first two goals that I need to cancel that I write down are really just the two poles that I was talking about. The first one
yes.
is the need for someone to be there for me. The second yep. one is the need to be able to handle this on my own.
Exactly. And then, you know, variations on a theme. Again, when Yeshua said 77 times 70 times, there might be another dozen goals that will lead you to just watch as you cancel each one. Be very mindful of what moves in you and catch the subtlety of the thoughts that come. What's the next piece that I need to unwind here to free my whole physiology from that? Speak of angels, and angels appear. Hey, young lady.
Hi. Hi, Michael. Hi, Jeannie. I did want to give you a progress report because I did do some worksheets on canceling those goals that you lined out for me. And you know, one of the beautiful things that I've learned in life is that you know, when you really need to know something or understand something, it just pops in. And you know, this, I was telling you that, I mean, I had tried to do like past life regression stuff years ago, and I just wasn't didn't seem like I was capable of doing it. But then all of a sudden in the last few years, you know, I was given these two different glimpses. And I had to assume that they were from a past life because they certainly weren't from a current life, or maybe they were, you know, something from an ancestor. I don't know. But when it was just really the summer of 2020, it was June of 2020 when I was given the vision of myself committing suicide. And what that really helped me to see in relation to everything that was going on with what I was feeling as a child and these feelings that I didn't think I could handle. Was that the things that were going on that were triggering those feelings were really triggering feelings that weren't just from those things that were going on. This was coming
right.
from this lifetime in which I had committed suicide. And
yep.
Well, it made sense because about 10 years ago, I for the first time since I shut all that down as a child, I tapped back into those feelings. And, you know, I had remembered that it was really, really bad, but until I actually went there as an adult and re-experienced it, I couldn't,
right.
I mean, it was total obliteration. I mean, it was like, I could only stay there for a moment because it was just like, and I thought, how did I even
so intense
child? Yes, so black than the blackest black you can imagine. And but
well,
now
you know, when
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to throw in the thought that when we're in that denial phase, and we just have no tools, no faculties with which to handle the, and it really is the thought disorders, the feelings are heavy and traumatic, but what needs to be handled and shifted are the thoughts that create those feelings, because feelings are simply a reflection of a neuropeptide hitting a cell and reflecting
right.
off as, here's the quality of the creative process, and without tools, man, that's a load. And we've called, you know, the thing that hides those things from us, we've called the divine forgettery. You know, put this away, I can't handle this. But then as you're strong enough, you get to start to open it again. And that's just like so awesome that you've lived your life in a way that you've headed back to that where you've acquired the tools and you're ready to handle it. Like, what a gift to your bloodline that is.
Right. Yeah. And I had a big aha, which is exactly what you're saying. Last night, as I was laying in bed, because I saw that, yes, I did feel like I was going to die if I wasn't going to get help with my feelings, then I had to shut it all down or I was going to die. And I saw the association that my mind made between those feelings and my having committed suicide. And so there's this association between those feelings and death. But then I had the big aha, which is, wait a minute. It wasn't the feelings that led to my suicide. It was my thought that I could no longer live with those feelings to my suicide.
That's it, exactly.
And that, so I immediately...
And suicide is resolvable.
Yeah.
It's resolvable. We've had workshops. We were in Hawaii several years ago, and we did a series of workshops at Unity of Diamond Head. It was a week-long series, and we were going to be on several of the other islands, and the church had such a response, they contacted us knowing we were still in Hawaii and said, hey, while you're here, would you come back and do another week of workshops? We don't usually do that. So about 6 weeks later, we did another series at the same Unity of Diamond Head. It was difficult for us because, you know, it was by that then it's February. We had to stay in Hawaii for an extra 2 weeks in February. That was really, you know, instead of coming back to the Northeast. But anyway, that week, the Sunday, we had three different people show up that said to us that that when they were there 6 weeks earlier on the Sunday, that they were planning their suicide. And all three of them were like, oh, I understand. It's gone. I'm so glad I'm alive. Now, they still had work to do. In fact, one of the people, I think, Ginny, you probably worked with him for about another 2 years, right? And then they didn't kill themselves because it's those five disorders that create such pain and hopelessness that all they have to do is be forgiven and boom, it's we're free of it. But if people don't have the tools, you know, and that's why our commitment is, how are we going to make this available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet? Because there's so many things that can just be worked through if people have the tools to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations for opening that window a little wider. You know, there's a line in the Course of Miracles that says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do. And that opening you created is huge. It not only impacts you and your bloodline, but it impacts anyone on the planet with those same issues. You open the energy window a little wider for any and everybody who's got those thought disorders to clean them up, to bring them to love and heal them.
Yeah.
Wow. So nice work. That's awesome.
Thank you. So my question is this. So once I uncovered that, and I immediately asked the Holy Spirit to remove this thought from my mind, and this association between those really intense feelings and death.
Right.
And so, and something you said yesterday really was so key for me, because I knew that I had repressed all those feelings, right? And I, you know, since I have been doing this work on myself, I've been saying, well, I'm willing to feel those feelings. I'm willing to feel those feelings. But yet there was obviously this part of my mind that was like, no, it's going to lead to your death. You cannot.
Yep.
And so now that I see that, oh, wow, it wasn't the feelings that killed me. It was my thoughts about the feelings.
Yep.
So
that's
now,
exactly.
Yeah, so what happens now? I mean, so now is, I would assume that part of my mind that was so unwilling to allow those feelings to come forward and be felt, I mean, is that now going to allow me to do that? And how do I, is there something I can do?
Well, notice you've been doing it. Notice the lightness in your voice today compared to yesterday. You've moved a giant amount of work. And, you know, if you've listened over the years, one of the things that I'll say on occasion is the skill we're inviting people to develop is the ability to literally reach into their own cells, recapture the neuropeptide. Remember, we've talked about, you know, in the cell biologist laboratory, they've shown us that when you think a thought, the thought produces this molecule, neuropeptide. Neuropeptide circulates around in the structure till it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the cell, and when the neuropeptide lands on the cell sends out a warning signal. And or the cell sends out a beauty signal. It's like, oh man, that thought feels so good. I just feel so awesome with that. I'm on track today. And that's the cell telling you your creative process is on track. And or if it's a disintegrative neuropeptide, as it's entering the cell sends out, they say, oh my God, don't do that again. No, no, no. The cell's telling you the quality of your creative process. We are creators. And what most people do is they buy into the generational patterns, the thought disorders that are already there, and live their lives in a way, you know, a fifth of scotch, you know, never hurt anybody. Of course, you know, I mean, you look at the statistics of what goes on with alcohol, and that it's still an acceptable thing. In fact, it's promoted in our culture, and kids go off to college to learn how to chug beer by the gallon. I mean, it's crazy, but that's our culture, and that's promoted, and that's allowed because there's so much pain and trauma that people are carrying around. They want to be anesthetized. Mm-hmm. They have no tools to process through that stuff. So the skill to develop is the ability to reach back into our own cells, pull the neuropeptide out, literally take that traumatic thought that might be three generations old, pull it out of the cell, decode it, know exactly what it is. Oh, this is from, you know, suicidal, homicidal, oh my God, look at this, and to forgive. And how do you forgive? You recognize that physiology holds these thought disorders. Mm-hmm. The flip side of the coin, for, you know, you're looking at heads and tails on a coin. They're the same coin. The flip side of the physiological trauma or disease in a cell is perception based on that content being resonated. Oh, I hate or I fear or I whatever, perception. And physiology are flip sides of the same coin. So when there's pained perception, there's a disease process and disease energy moving in my cells. So when that disease energy comes up, I breathe. I recognize that something's driving that perceptual content to be used at this moment. The something is a goal. When I cancel the goal, the perception collapses in on itself. In other words, now I'm right into that disintegrative energy in the cell. And when I stand in willingness and I develop a skill, I'm reaching in, I'm pulling that energy out of the cell, I'm looking it square in the eye and bringing it to the presence of love. I now know what it's about, although knowing what it's about is not a requirement. Cognitive awareness is not a requirement. Processing the energy is. So even if I don't know what that trauma is about, I can let it come forward, I can breathe, I hold to, you know, you look at step four in the worksheet, I'm going to tap into conscious, active, present love. And healing happens when something locked in the cell or reflecting as perception is allowed to come forward directly. When there's disintegrative content in the cell and a goal activates it, what happens is whoever, whatever my object of attention is, my mind will massage that disease content in my cellular structure into a picture of somebody else. And I'll say, look what you're making me feel. Now, once I recognize that's what perception is, that's what projection is, then I can cancel the goal that's driving that whole process. And now my awareness collapses right back into the very cell where that disease energy is stored. And instead of experiencing it by projecting it into my brain's image of someone else, which means I'm in an indirect relationship with it, by collapsing into it, I come into direct relationship with it. Now, it can be horrifically traumatic, but if I'm at step five in the worksheet where I've canceled the goal, love is present, and maybe, you know, I recognize, like you did yesterday, I need some support with this. So I'm bringing other people in my community in to hold the space, and it doesn't matter where we are. You know, Bob down in Australia might be the one who was holding the space so powerfully that gave you just that little extra boost to move through what you moved through yesterday. It's the presence of active love when we bring something directly out of the cell instead of indirectly through projection, bring it out of the cell and expose it to love, and that's where its dissolution takes place. And that's why yesterday I suggested, okay, so there are several variations on a theme. There are several worksheets that you may do around this, and there'll be others that you'll uncover as you do it. You know, surely something this deep is going to be, have many tentacles to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I suggested, so look at this goal, look at this goal, look at this goal, and whatever others you uncover, be conscious of them. And each time you collapse, each time you cancel the goal, the pained perceptual construct that comes out of the cell collapses back into the cell. And when I bring love to what's in the cell and the content that's there directly, it's like I'm shaving it off. I'm weakening its presence in my structure. The core of healing, when love is conscious, active, and present, and I'm not talking about the sappy, sexual, I love you kind of love. I'm talking about a human being created as love is conscious in this moment in their own physiology, or somebody in the space is conscious as present active love. When that occurs and that which is in the cell is allowed to come forward directly and the two meet, that which is of a disintegrative nature begins to dissolve in the presence of love, literally dissipate and disappear. And, you know, we've watched people, and it can take time. We've watched people who had a major issue. Man, this has been going on in my life for years. Every time it comes up, I go into terror and trauma. And here I am 2 weeks later, and this comes up, and, gee, it just happened again. And I look, and I go, oh, well, so what? Well, why was I so upset before? Because I had dissociated pained content in my structure that I hadn't worked through. When I resolve it, it's just another event in life. Yeah, nothing to it. But when there's unresolved mind energy of a disintegrative nature held in the cell, that thing, when it's resonated, it screams and yells with its pain and its trauma. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So probably the next layer of thought disorders to uncover would be the ones that, you know, created those feelings in the first place, which, you know, I mean, I've uncovered that, oh, it wasn't the feelings that killed me.
Right.
But then there
right.
were those feelings, because I know right now what came to me is, okay, obviously I've had a goal since I was a child that I need to get rid of those feelings, so I got to definitely cancel that goal.
Right.
And, but I'm sure that there, you know, there were thoughts that created those feelings in that lifetime, and I'm sure, you know, it's probably the same kind of thoughts that I've been having about my missing cat, you know, because
exactly.
I think that was...
That was a stimulus, as I said yesterday. Who'd have thunk it? Your cat leaving gave you the opportunity to go back and deal with some of the deepest, most traumatic things in your childhood and to uncover what at least your mind was showing you were past life dynamics of great trauma. I mean, and for me, that's just documentation of the thesis that we keep offering to people. While you're holding disease energies, the purpose of life is to kick you in the limitation, to come along and resonate exactly what it is that you need to work through, bring it to the surface. When it starts to come to the surface, people do one of two things. They deny ownership of it. No, this isn't mine. Harry did it to me. Now that content is used and massaged to make a picture in the brain, a construct called perception, about Harry, and see, Harry's the problem in my life. Now that I'm taking that content from myself, that disease energy that's mine, and putting it into massaging it so it looks like, and it shows up in my mind as Harry, I'm in an indirect relationship with that. I feel it, but I only see it through my brain's image of Harry, and I think it's actually Harry's. Where resolution comes is I have to come into direct relationship with it. And I do that by, and to me, this is just such a genius piece of information that Yeshua gave us 2,000 years ago. I wish I'd discovered this. I didn't. Cancel the goal. The goal is driving the perception. My picture, my brain's image of Harry collapses in on itself. Now I go to the core thought disorder. And you touched into two or three major thought disorders yesterday. You know, I can't handle this. I can't live through this. This is going to kill me. You know, that's what I need to literally de-energize, you know, process out the energy of that. And remember, our definition in this work of process is the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a perception about some object of attention, there's a disease in my cell, that's the tail side of the coin. The head side of the coin is, Harry is the problem in my life. How do I get rid of that picture that Harry's the problem in my life? I cancel the goal. Now I'm back in direct relationship with that energy. And if I hold to present love, or somebody's there to support me and hold to present love, I melt that energy away. And it's gone. That's forgiveness.
Yeah, and I guess the one distinction I would make for this, what I'm working through presently, is that Harry, there's no Harry. It's me.
Yeah. Well, and we're you know, in the Aramaic language, when they say you have to hold a space or have rachma for neighbor, in Aramaic, you are your own neighbor.
Okay.
Neighbors, anybody
yeah.
that you think about. So you're holding love present for yourself, and the self, you know, Yeshua talks about two of us involved in our lives. It says, in order for you, and we could add to that being, to live, you, non-being self, have to die. There's two of us in there.
Yeah.
And the non-being
yeah.
self, he says, has to die. That's what needs to be dissolved or
yeah.
processed through in order to be free of it.
The self that I made up.
Exactly. The one that was made up out of the pain and what was unresolvable and unhandleable and was modeled by your power persons. And as
mm-hmm.
you take each piece of that, you shave off, you weaken another field that emanates from brain cells that holds trauma or pain, and you get to the point where your physiology can't produce trauma and pain because there's none left there. You know, people say, I'm upset because of this. Nobody's ever been upset because of this. People have been upset because in them there's upset, and they can make the upset about any this in the world.
Right.
Or know this in the world. They can make it about anything. The truth is, nobody's ever been upset. Nobody's ever been angry. Nobody's ever been frustrated with anybody else ever in their lives. All there is,
right,
is, oh, I have anger or frustration or upset in my mind, and I pretend, and this is denial, I pretend that it's about that. When I get back to the truth, the reason I'm experiencing it is because it's in me. When I stop telling myself these silly stories about it being everybody else, and I begin to cancel the goals that cause my mind to show me it's about everybody else, that's when I get to process through it. And that's the skill we're working to develop with people and support people in having. And that you did so beautifully yesterday. That was powerful to be part of it.
So I guess I'm still wondering if those feelings that, you know, have that I shut off are still, I assume that they still need to be processed through. Like, I still need to go through that process of...
You did some pretty big pieces of it. By the way, what's happening around your cat?
Nothing.
No?
Hmm. No,
so,
I mean, one of the...
So notice yesterday, you had a big painful story about your cat. You don't have a big painful story today. That's what you processed through. You've done it. I'm not saying you're finished with all of that, but yesterday, if your cat was mentioned, it was a major trauma and pain. And now, what is it? Well, actually, your response was nothing. I mean, that doesn't mean to say you're happy your cat's gone. Doesn't mean you say you couldn't go, oh, I miss my cat or whatever. But notice that the amount of pain that you've processed through as a result of canceling the goals that you had, that's how forgiveness works.
Yeah, and I recognize that this thinking that I had to know, right? I wasn't going to survive unless I found out, like, what happened to him.
Right.
That wasn't actually a need, it was a want, and that I could live without knowing, and that what was shown to me so beautifully, like, when I received those past life visions, was that when I needed to know about them, like when I tried to do it thinking, oh, I would like to know, I didn't get anything. But when I needed to know, when it would be helpful to me to know in order for me to move forward, I was
there.
They just popped in. So that taught me that when I need to know, I will know. And so if I don't know, then that means I don't need to know. And so it's helping me to accept that I don't know.
Yeah. And you can trust it.
Right, right.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, that is an awesome piece of work, young lady.
Thank you.
Millions
so much.
Yet unborn will benefit from that. Millions.
Yeah, and I saw how, I never had really made that connection until we were on the phone yesterday, that the connection with my grandmother and her daughter. Now, her daughter didn't just disappear. I mean, she left home at the age of 18, but she never found out where she went. She never spoke to her again, ever. She literally disappeared.
Right.
And my same thing with my father. So she was having those same kind of feelings. My father, her brother, was also never, spoke with her again. Now, one of his cousins, and as far as I'm aware, neither of them ever spoke of her. And so I didn't know if there was ever, you know, any search for her or anything like that.
Right.
But,
or any resolution,
Well, yeah. Well, what I did, I think it was about 40 years ago, one of my father's cousins apparently had been looking for her, and he found her out in San Francisco. And so, and then I guess he tried to talk, to ask her to call her mother, because she was, already like 85 at that point. And I guess she just refused to... contact anyone.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of mind blowing to me. How do you walk away at the age of 18 and just never?
You do that because you're carrying a lot of what seems to be unresolvable pain, and you've projected that pain into your brain's image of that person you're walking away from. And to go back, you know, I can understand it from her side. To go back to communicate with her mother means that, you know, everything that she's been able to hide from herself and not deal with is going to come back in her face. And it's too much.
Yeah.
So I can understand why she'd say, no, I'm not going to do that. Because, I mean, just the thought of opening that communication would move that whole mass of data literally stored in her structure, creating disintegrative energetic patterns in tissue. But to bring that forward and start to look at it, you know, and I have no idea what the history was, what, you know, whether there was actual, you know, whether there was actual damage done to her by mom. Maybe my grandma, mom was, you know, an abuser, who knows? And or maybe nothing ever happened that was factual, but, you know, if she brought that kind of trauma in and through her denial, project into her brain's image of grandma, like she wouldn't want to ever talk to grandma again.
Yeah.
Because, or mom again, because, you know, it would mean I'd have to open that bag of worms and start to deal with it. And the reason she ran away was, I can't deal with that. You know, I can't live through that.
Right. Yeah, so that was one of the pieces that I saw, was that when I felt like, because I noticed that my back had started bothering me, and I've had back issues throughout my life. And I at one point I really saw that the back issues were about me not being supported, like no one having my back. And
right.
So when I started feeling that this morning, I was like, okay, so it reminded me of what I had uncovered in doing one of the worksheets yesterday, which was that even though there was no one physically present to help me through, you know, what I was feeling, that
right.
doesn't mean that I didn't have support, because we always have support, you know, from God. And what I also saw was my whole ancestral line, you know, those who are in spirit now, but they are supporters. I felt that. And I thought, wow, I never really, you know, saw that before, that we always have support, even though it may not be physically present for us.
Right. It's invisible, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, anyway, I just want to thank you so much for helping me. I'm sure there's, you know, yeah, there's more.
What a great piece of work. Actually, I'm going to talk to Jeannie about maybe we can put these two yesterday and today's conversations together in one audio track, and we'll put it on as one of the special shows, because it's such, you know, from start to finish, such a profound piece of work that is instructive to everybody. You know, it's just like, so nice work. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome and deserving, as Dr. Tim would say. And, you know, it's exactly what we're here for. So,
yeah, I'm glad I called.
Sweet. Well, anything else on your mind for today, young lady?